Once a month, we hear what it is like to live with mental illness. Our guides are the people of Southern Oregon Compass House in Medford. It's built on the clubhouse model of community mental health care. It is a place where people with persistent mental illness come together to support each other and their shared space. This month, we hear from Tia, who visited with Remington Jarvie, who's the Compass House Employment Coordinator. The interview took place at Compass House.
How long ago did you become a member of Compass House?
I first came in for a tour in, I think, April of 2018, and then became an active member, I think, in October or November of 2018. I wasn't in the right place in April, because November of 2017, I lost my fiance, and I just wasn't in the right frame of mind to be around people yet.
Well, obviously, that's probably an incredibly traumatic time in your life. But here at Compass House, obviously, people struggle with different mental illnesses. Did you have struggles with mental illness before those events in your life?
Yes.
What were your struggles?
PTSD.
Okay.
I was molested as a child. So that played a lot into everything. Depression. Started noticing that in junior high. And I would use poetry as an outlet. And it was really dark poetry, I'll tell you what.
Dark junior high poetry.
Oh my gosh, it was bad. And used that as an outlet through high school also. I used to lose my temper really, really bad. Although once I started high school, I didn't lose my temper as bad. I think through my whole high school, I think I got into one fight, and that was my senior year.
Like fists being thrown
fight?
Yeah. Yeah.
I was trying to break up a fight, and I never want to lose my temper like that again because I black out, and I don't remember what happens. No, I don't want to do that again.
So your fuse has grown a little longer over the years?
That's yeah. For sure.
When did you start seeking professional help for these things?
In my early 20s.
You had a lot of years of just coping with it.
Yeah. Figuring out different ways to cope. I'd write in a journal. That helped somewhat. I went to church regularly. Although, over the last, I'd say, 10 years, I withdrew from church for a while. And part of that played with my job. That I was a caregiver for 20 years. But I'd work in the memory care. And they'd have dementia and everything. And, ooh, I got my butt kicked a lot.
You didn't start fights there, but you were involved in...
Oh, had a good chunk of hair pulled out and got kicked in the knee. And then I'd do in-home care. I took care of my grandpa for 5 years before I started working in facilities and in-home care, so...
Are you currently working?
No, I am now disabled. I had back surgery in 2016.
Semi-recently, as far as major surgeries go.
Yeah. I've had knee surgery, back surgery, and shoulder surgery.
You mentioned started getting help for some of your struggles in your early 20s, and you mentioned medication. Was it medication counseling? Did that change over the years?
We just started with the medication, and I didn't start counseling until 2015, 2016, and that helped a lot. Now I am going to see a different counselor, and that's helping a lot, and coming to Compass House has helped me open up more as a person. I'm more outspoken than I used to be.
That's good.
I mean, we had people in the dining room here at Compass House yesterday, and Elizabeth had asked if anybody wanted to volunteer, and nobody raised their hand. I looked at her, I'm like, I'll do it. Last year, I wouldn't have done that.
No.
I started going back to church. I don't know how I managed it, but we started with the Book of Ruth in a Bible study, and I'll tell you what, it was powerful. It hit home on a lot of subjects, especially the losing the love of your life and everything. It's like, okay, I guess I'm meant to be here. And then I started coming to Compass House more, and between church and Compass House, it's just opened new doors for me.
One question that I often find interesting to ask is, early in your life, how did your coping skills work, and how have they changed?
Instead of writing it down and just hiding my feelings, I actually talk about them. I'll sit and I'll let it out, you know, whatever's bothering me. I'll sit and I'll talk to someone. Like on Friday, I was having a low point, and I was at my best friend's house, and her husband and I were still awake watching TV. Everybody else was asleep. We were going to the Ducks and Beavers Civil War game the next day. So I was having a low point, and I looked at him, and I'm like, I'm having a bad time right now. I'm like, I'm just feeling really alone, and, you know, feeling kind of like nobody wants me, and it's like, why? You know? And we just sat there and we talked for a few minutes, and just him listening helped.
You mentioned that there were some years of you coping with things before you got help. And then you also mentioned that you checked out Compass House, but it took you some time to make these steps. There's a lot of people in the world, and some maybe even listening, that are in different stages of their struggles. If people had similar struggles to you, or hearing you talk about your life maybe hits home a little bit, what advice or encouragement would you give them?
If you're not seeing a counselor, go see a counselor. They're amazing people. You know, they listen, they give you tools to use. You know, they suggest several different tools. That way you find what works for you. Come check us out at Compass House. There's always someone willing to talk with you and listen. I mean, it doesn't hurt to talk to someone.
That is Tia from Southern Oregon Compass House in Medford, our featured interview in this month's edition of Compass Radio, which gives us a monthly glimpse inside the struggles of people who've been dealing with mental illness. Chris Folden from Compass House joins us now from the staff. He's the development coordinator. Chris, good to see you again.
Good to see you, Jeffrey.
When I was hearing the very first part of what Tia was talking about here, it really struck me the impact of her molestation as a child. That it had stuck with her. And it seems like this is not unusual that an event that is that traumatic that early in life will end up getting buried and become something of a landmine in a sense, won't it?
That's something that's actually becoming a bigger thing throughout the state. Peter Buckley down here in Southern Oregon has really been talking a lot about ACEs and...
Adverse childhood experiences, yeah.
Right. And how much traumas in our childhood affect and, you know, lead on and all can oftentimes help kind of perpetuate the cycle as, you know, people who don't get help a lot of times will have the tendency to pass that on to the next generation. So it's something that has really been moving in a positive direction in Oregon, making positive change.
Taking those things into account with programs that like trauma-informed care, where you're making sure that you identify what is bothering people, what their trauma is or was, and be able to incorporate that into training, education, all that.
Yeah, the community has really embraced it with, crisis intervention trained officers. Our behavioral health unit at Asante has adopted the sanctuary model, which is amazing. You know, you walk in and people don't ask what's wrong with you. People ask what has happened to you, and that really kind of shifts, you know, like, hey, maybe somebody's actually, you know, kind of caring and not, you know, dealing with me. They're really trying to help me.
That's a different, it's a subtle difference, it sounds like, at first, but what's wrong with you makes it sound like it's your fault versus what happened to you, which is much less you-focused language, right?
I'm not sure why it's taken us so long to start kind of adopting these principles of being human, but we're all human, and all of us have troubles and struggles, and helping each other through it is how we're going to get through it.
So the medication versus talk therapy, is medication usually the lead? Is that usually the first place that the current treatment regime calls for?
I'm not a clinician, so I couldn't really speak to that. It is really effective for some, and then others, a lot of people have, you know, just really kind of isolated so much and, you know, have kind of lost so much self-confidence that they just need to, you know, kind of get back out and re-engage back into life.
In terms of engaging with Compass House, is Tia's story pretty typical? It sounds like there were some tentative steps, like, you know, she was aware of Compass House, had visited, and then wasn't quite ready and came back later on. Is that a pretty typical trajectory for people who become members at Compass House?
It is. Elizabeth constantly tells the story of how somebody that she worked with every day, sitting side by side, one day looked at her and said, you know, I am so glad I met you because I rode the bus every single day for 2 months and never got off because I was afraid people wouldn't like me and I wouldn't be accepted. And when I walked in, I was welcomed, and not only welcomed, I was sought after for my talents, strengths, and abilities. And that's something that nobody had expectations of me. And that really resonates with me, that story, still today.
There's a real shared sense of purpose, clearly, at Southern Oregon Compass House. It's not the only Compass House, I should point out. There are others across the country. But the idea being, it is a clubhouse, your members. But there's also not a real strict division between staff and members.
Yeah. Once you take the power dynamic out of it, you're working together side by side as colleagues. And for once, they get to be in the expert role. You sit them down to pay bills in QuickBooks and, hey, why don't you drive? And through learning how to problem solve and work through things together, all of a sudden, all of the problems in their lives seem a little less daunting. That is a little bit of confidence kind of in themselves that they can start removing the barriers that they have in themselves. And that's sort of where the magic comes out.
With the move to larger quarters, are you able to offer all the services at Compass House that you want to offer?
That's always going to be probably a no. There's always things that we see. However, we are super fortunate in this valley to have partners that we can partner with to help integrate people back out in the community. With our new space, we're able to have laundry facilities for our homeless members to give them a sense of dignity. We have an ADA-compliant shower, so that way they can shower and be dressed and get clothes through our clothing closet and show up to an interview or to get housing. And then we just started our newest service of a member financial services, so helping people learn how to budget, and also how to save money. A lot of people aren't able to start bank accounts yet. So through a general endorsement through First Interstate, we're able to start a member financial services for people.
Down to our last minute here, but lest anybody think you got huge with this move to a new place, I just asked you what the budget was. It's less than $1 million. You really run things on a shoestring at Compass House.
We do, but we do it through the generosity of others, and we do the best that we can with what we have, and all of us pulling in together is what makes it happen.
All right, this is another edition of Compass Radio here on the Jefferson Exchange here on the News and Information Service. Chris Folden is the development coordinator at Southern Oregon Compass House. He came here to augment our monthly visit with a member of Compass House. Remington Jarvie this month interviewed Tia. We got to hear Tia's story. Thanks again, as always, Chris, for bringing information, and thanks to Tia for talking to us, and thanks to Remington Jarvie for taking in the interview. Good to have you here on the Jefferson Exchange.
Good to have you. Thanks.